The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Amateur Traveler, episode 226. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about fancy hotels, roadside food, and black sand beaches as we return to Maui. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Today's episode is going to be a little different. We're going to skip the news section, and I'm going to do a shorter episode because I'm going to be following this up with at least a part two, and that's because I am traveling in Maui this week as a guest of the Maui Convention and Visitors Bureau, and so I haven't had as much time to podcast, so I'm going to put this out, but I'm going to put it out in pieces, and I hope that's okay with you. Without any further ado, let's get in to talk about Maui. And when I say Maui, I think a number of you would immediately be able to put a pin in your map to this particular Hawaiian island. But in case you don't know, Maui is the second largest of the Hawaiian islands, and it's second to the Big Island of Hawaii. And it's also the second newest, then, of the Hawaiian islands. The Hawaiian islands, the newer ones are at your right or to the east, and the older ones are at your left or to the west. And so Hawaii would be the newest of the Hawaiian islands, still with active volcanoes. All the Hawaiian islands are volcanic islands, and so as they get older, they also get flatter because the volcanoes wear away more. And so Maui is actually two different volcanoes, and so they're two different parts of Maui. And so West Maui is centered around an ancient volcano called Mauna Kahalawai, and East Maui is centered around Haleakala. And the first is 5,700 feet tall, and the second one is 10,000 feet tall. And that's important when you're looking at the Hawaiian Islands because those mountains are tall enough that they make weather. That is to say, as storms come into Maui, they come in from the northeast, or the windward side of the island is the northeast of these two volcanoes. That's going to be the wet side because the storms are going to run into these mountains, going to form clouds, drop rain. And so it's going to be wet on one side and dry on the other. That being said, I'm staying this time where the resorts are, and most of the resorts on the island or the western shores of the island, so it's easier from a Maui hotel to see a sunset than a sunrise, but when you're on vacation, who wants to get up and see a sunrise anyway? The exception to that would be Hana, which we'll talk about a little later. The first 3 days of this trip, I was staying in the southwestern part of the eastern part of the island, that is to say Wailea, and then this next 3 days, I'm staying in the northwestern part of the western part of Maui in Kapalua. I stayed the first 3 nights at the Marriott Beach Resort, and then the next 3 nights, counting tonight, I'll be staying at the Ritz-Carlton. Both are upscale and gorgeous resorts. I won't talk about the Ritz-Carlton yet because I just got here. One thing that's interesting about the Marriott Beach Resort in Wailea is that it is almost the reason why Marriott has a rewards program, or at least it is the sort of perfect hotel for the idea behind those programs, that you do a lot of business travel and then you store up points and then use them to go to someplace beautiful and tropical. And so the Marriott Beach Resort in Wailea is always one of the top two hotels in that chain in terms of where people use their Marriott reward points. And the other one would be New York City because of the expense, I would imagine, of vacations in New York City. Before I talk about what I've been doing, let me tell you a little bit about a press trip. When you're given a press trip, obviously you're invited to come see things that would be interesting so that you'll write about them. Now, you're not asked to write anything that wouldn't really be your opinion, but obviously a well-run press trip, they're going to match up so that you are taken to places or go to places that you enjoy so that you write positively about it. And so this has been a well-run press trip because I've been spending my days doing things that I've enjoyed doing, some of which I would have done on my own, but some of them I probably wouldn't have known about if I hadn't been on the trip. So let me tell you a bit about both of those kind of things that I've been doing. When I first arrived, I went to the Iowa Valley, which is just to the west of the airport, and it's actually the site of the battle that King Kamehameha fought when he took over Maui from one of the kings here and united the Hawaiian Islands. And I've been to the Iowa Valley before, and I've been there to see a tall spire of stone called the Iowa Needle. And I apologize right now for my Hawaiian pronunciation, because Hawaii is definitely one of those places that can be a major vowel exporter. And I seriously think that Hawaii and the Czech Republic should get together, because Czech Republic could use a few more vowels. But we've got a lot of extra vowels in Hawaiian, and you're supposed to pronounce every one when you pronounce things correctly. And not a lot of consonants, not a lot of great variety of consonants. There are 5 long vowels, 5 short vowels, and only 8 consonants. So the words tend to be very long and sometimes difficult to read, especially at highway speeds, as we've talked about earlier on the show, when you're trying to read street signs. But as I say, I went to the Iowa Valley, and I didn't go first to see the Iowa Needle, but instead I went to the Hawaii Nature Center. And this is something that was set up for me by the Maui Convention and Visitors Bureau, and went on the Rainforest Walk. And they offer a 2-hour walk with a guide, and Jay was my guide, who's been with them for 12 years. And this normally would cost about a nickel short of $20 for adults, less for kids. They do have many children's programs actually at the Nature Center, and they do a lot of programs with Hawaii or Maui school-age children, especially in second and fourth grade. But this was targeted at adults or at families. And we walked through the nature, and we walked through the preserve there. And it was really interesting, the depth of the knowledge that Jay had as he was looking at different plants. As you look at different plants in Maui, you get a little bit of the history of the island, because at one point, each of these islands was a barren rock formed by volcanoes. And then the original plants drifted in on the wind or on the water. But then additionally, the Polynesians, as they came in, brought in a number of plants that they found particularly useful. The tea plant, not the kind you drink, but ti, which has the big leaves that they used for cooking. They brought in the kukui plant that was used for medicines, among other things. And then they also brought in, obviously, the taro plant, which was very much a staple in their diet. And the Nature Center has some taro fields, which are made in a combination of the ancient way, but with a modern watering system. And then later on, during the monarchy, one single person brought in both guava, mangoes, and coffee, and they have all 3 of those at the Nature Center also. Although I was surprised to see coffee plants that were 15, 20 feet tall, and also really tall banana plants. So that was the Nature Center, certainly worth a stop. They soon will have a self-guided tour, which will do the same thing that I did for less money, using a brochure that you'll have that will point out which plants are which as you go along. Also, if you have a group, they also do group outings, and then also have overnight facilities there in a lodge. The next day, my assignment was to spend time at beaches. It was a dirty, thankless job, but really somebody needed to do it. And I was staying down in Wailea, as I mentioned, and so I was predominantly hitting the beaches down there in East Maui and down in the southern part down by Wailea. The most famous beach down there is definitely Big Beach or McKenna Beach. McKenna Beach has 2 beaches, Big Beach and Little Beach. Little Beach is a clothing optional beach, and so I was hanging out in Big Beach. And then also at the end of the road, as you go south from Wailea, you come to a lava field, and this is the newest lava field, or one of the newest lava fields on Maui. Now, new on Maui means between 200 and 500 years old. So a couple other beaches that are worth looking at in that area. One I like is Chang's Beach, and I've got a photo that went up on the website, blog.amateurtraveler.com, about Chang's Beach. One of the great things about Maui and Hawaii in general is that the beaches are state property. You can't own a beach in Maui, certainly past a number of feet past the high tide marker. They have to be accessible to everybody, so even if you build a fancy hotel, you have to provide a public access to that beach. And Chang's Beach is one of those beaches. It's located behind the McKenna Surf Condos, and you have to wind your way through their property on a path that is very clearly marked as open to public beach access. I think it's beach access number 106, showing there are at least 106 different places where you can access the beach. And in this case, you park in a 9-car parking lot. And then after you take that path, you end up at Chang's Beach, which, because it's hidden behind these condos, is a rather secluded beach. It's a nice beach, and it's not very crowded. versus Wailea Beach, for instance, which I went to, and it's right by one of the more popular resorts, and therefore, by Maui standards, it's crowded. Now, we're not talking Coney Island at this point, but there are beaches that have fewer people on them and beaches that have more people, depending on what you're looking for. I have a resource that I use for finding beaches on Maui, and that is a book for Snorkel Maui and Lanai, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com because that's been very helpful for finding little beaches like this. I also went to the natural reserve at Ahihi Bay, which is a very rocky beach. If you are going to go there and you'd go there for the snorkeling, bring something to protect your feet. And if you're patient, I'll be putting out a video, an underwater video of some of the snorkeling that I did at that particular beach. And the other beach I did really enjoy for sort of intermediate body surfing would be Malu'aka Beach, which is behind the Maui Prince. And that was a beach that was not too crowded. Wailea Beach, for instance, was also nice, but it was much more crowded than that. So lots of great beaches in both parts of Maui, but those are some that I would recommend there down in the Wailea area. And as we're talking beaches, I might even suggest that many people, when they go to the Hawaiian Islands the first time, might hit a couple islands. Maui is one of those islands because it is in two parts. If you're going to do a beach vacation in Maui, you might think of Maui as two islands and do, say, 3 or 4 days down in Wailea and then 3 or 4 days up in Kaanapali or over in Hana, which we'll talk about. So it's possible with Maui that there's enough diversity to think about Maui as a longer vacation with two different home bases, which we have done as a family, and coincidentally is what I'm doing on this trip as well. My next adventure was up in the ranching part of upcountry, but I'm going to skip that and do that in the second half to continue on with this beach theme, because the next thing I did was to go the road to Hana. And if you're unaware of the road to Hana, it's a very windy road. I think one of the top 10 drives in the U.S. You got to love to drive to do Hana. I wouldn't do Hana on a bus. I saw people doing that. It wouldn't be my preference. If you don't like windy roads, just don't do Hana. But if you love to drive, and I do, then this is a great thing. You're not going to be driving very fast, because quite often it's 15 miles per hour. The road has a number of small one-lane bridges that you have to yield to oncoming traffic. So it's going to take you a while to get to Hana. It takes a couple hours to get to Hana, not counting stops. And you need to stop because this is the north coast, the wet coast of Maui on the eastern part of the island. It is beautiful. There are waterfalls. There may be rain as you're driving there, but that's going to produce more waterfalls. There are valleys and cliffs, and then there are a number of different places to stop. I would recommend you don't do what I did. And I've done the road to Hana twice now, and then I also did it 20 years ago. And I did it as a day trip, in and out. And I think that really, if I was going to do the road to Hana again on my schedule, I would do this as at least a 2-day outing and spend one night in Hana, at least. There is a resort in Hana right there on the beach. I know people who've stayed there who thought it was just lovely cabins on the beach, and you get up in the morning and all you see is the horizon. So that's something to think about, because that will give you a little more time to explore that area. The two things that I did, though, when I was there is I went to two different state parks. The first state park I went to, which is a gorgeous state park, is Wai'i Anapanapa, and you just have to love the names. And that particular state park has a black sand beach, a beautiful black sand beach that's set up against, you've got these very black rocks, the very, very blue of the ocean there at Hana, and then the lush, lush green vegetation around this beach. So just really gorgeous, first of all. And then one of the interesting things you can do there is when the lava flows in the Hawaiian Islands, it quite often flows in lava tubes. And so it doesn't flow at the surface, because what happens is as it flows, it cools at the surface, crusts over, and then stays hot, and so a tube of lava is coming down the mountain, not on the surface, but underneath. And at the end of that flow, sometimes that tube is left empty. And there is a tube like that, a lava tube, at the Wai'i Anapanapa State Park, and that has filled with fresh water. And so you can go into this lava tube and swim around in this cave that is formed by this. It's cool water, but it's fresh water. And I'll have some video of that with my underwater camera also, of swimming in this very dark cave at that state park. So that was very enjoyable. And then I did go to another state park, which has another lava tube. And that was the Ka'eleku Caverns. And that is a lava tube that is a dry lava tube, or at least not filled with water. It is damp, actually, that you can do a self-guided tour for a quarter of a mile into the mountain, basically. And they have put up signs that say, what you're looking at here, these are lava stalactites, or this tells you something about the kind of animals that can live in a lava tube. Nothing that can hurt you in this particular one. But it's very interesting. And I have some video from that. I'm not sure how it's going to turn out because it's very dark in there. They do give you a flashlight, or if you're someone like me who was traveling by yourself, they loan you two flashlights just in case one goes out. If you have traveling companions, you each get a flashlight. And just an interesting tour if you want to explore some of the volcanography of the Hawaiian Islands, and that's the Ka'aleku Caverns. And that does have a cost. That costs around $10 to get into and tour those caverns. Doesn't take all that long to do, but you do go, as I say, a quarter mile under. And you do go past skylights. That would be a place where there's a hole in the top of the lava tube that does bring some light down into there. With that, I'm going to end this first half of this show. This show, again, is going to come out in two parts. I'm going to put out the second part when I get home, and it's going to have some more about some of the culture of Maui, also some of the food, restaurants, things that I've been to other than the sightseeing destinations. If you have any questions about this episode, feel free to drop an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment at amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening. One more cathedral, I got to sit in one more cafe. I know that I should be heading home, but maybe not today.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.